views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome to We the People Talk Radio. It's Sunday. We're all a little bleary-eyed over here, everybody having gotten in the middle of the night from some great events. You are joining your hosts, Elizabeth Woodward, Aaron Ryan, and Bob Martin, our great sound engineer. And right now, we are shutting my computer off.
That 7-second delay that you hear our voices in the background is Elizabeth's computer. Throw the computer out the door. Do it.
Oh, that's so great.
Found the mute button.
Nothing like hearing the radio playback 7 seconds later.
Well, the interesting thing is...
There we go. Bill. Sorry, folks. You know, you'd think I would know better. I called into Carl Bott one Monday morning, and I had the radio on while I was talking to him. And I'm like, I am so sorry. I should know better.
But you are our comic relief. And the fact that it's so genuine makes it funny.
I'm so incredibly imperfect. It's hilarious.
Well, we're all imperfect. You just do it nicely on the radio.
Good morning, everybody.
So we're all sleep deprived this morning. It's going to be a hilarious show.
It should be. We promise you entertainment always. So we had a great event in Yreka last night, defending rural America. And in a few minutes, we'll be speaking with our great guest who's calling in from Yreka. She traveled from Wyoming. But before we get to that, a little housekeeping. Wanted to kind of refer back to a show we had a few weeks ago with Cameron Gamble of Project Taken. And if you recall that show, he has a great program that teaches individuals and families how to avoid abduction. And he will be at the Reading Tea Party meeting tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, 2570 South Bonneview Road in Reading. He will be signing up folks for his first class in Reading that he's going to have next weekend. So if you're interested at all, it'll be at Simpson University on October 29th. You can go to his website at projecttaken.com. But if you do want to sign up in person and you're one of our regular attendees of the Reading Tea Party, he will be there tomorrow night to get you registered.
And I have it on good word that there is an attendance special going on.
Yes, and yes. He will be giving away some
seats. Oh, that's
seats.
Right.
He's going to be giving away some seats. We're going to raffle off a couple of
no,
spots.
No, we'll have a drawing.
A drawing. We're going to have a drawing.
For no IRS agents need to pull.
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't hear that. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, if you come tomorrow night, you can do it hands-on. He'll be there.
Yeah, it's going to be a great program, and we were talking to him yesterday before this started. And
there we are again.
The sound is back. We're going to throw Elizabeth's computer out the door. There we go.
So sorry.
We can't throw her out the door because she's got a cast on her leg. And all
that. I know.
Way too cumbersome.
You can feel sorry for me. That's okay.
What the heck? Gotta watch her every minute. Okay, so yesterday in Yreka had this great event, and it turned out to be just for the people who were there, who were thinking, well, why didn't these guys tell us it was going to be so long? We honestly did not know. It started out on a conference call. We were talking about Kirk McKenzie's visit up to the Siskiyou County area, and he had taken a lot of video footage of different people up there, and we were talking about the removal of the Klamath dams and how that would affect people. And at the end of that, it was like, well, gosh, you know, it's too bad people out of this area don't know. And he lives down in the Bay Area, and one of the ranchers comes from the Bay Area, and his daughter lives down there now. And she said, gosh, you know, because my friends and people I know down there, they don't know anything about it, but I bet they would be supportive. And so then came this, let's bring a bus of people up, you know, and they could stay with the different ranchers and farmers and stuff and get to see what the area's like and go on a tour. And then it turned into, well, we should let them meet the community. Let's have the community. And then it was, well, we could put all this film footage together and Kirk could show the movie. And then it turned into a panel with 8 sheriffs and attorney from Wyoming.
It was fabulous. Probably about 800 people A lot of enthusiasm. I mean, when you get into some of the rural areas, and don't forget that rural America is what makes our lifestyle possible. You're sitting with the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
I mean, these people are so genuine.
Nice pun.
Yeah.
Thanks. Nice rural America pun.
Thanks. These folks are so genuine, and the panel of 8 sheriffs from some of the surrounding counties was, every one of them got a standing ovation. I mean, these folks really understand.
That was the exercise part of the program.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny because the sheriff up there, John Lopey, he is, it's funny, we were on our way home and I told Bill, I said, man, if they ever do a remake of Braveheart, like the current version, you remember the part where Mel Brooks painted his face half blue?
Mm-hmm.
Half whatever it was.
Yeah.
And, rode back and forth in front of everybody and it was like, it's now or never,
you know?
And I gave that impassioned speech. I was like, John could do that.
Yeah, he was great.
He's great. I mean, yeah. These guys understand that they are the constitutional limit, you know?
Yeah.
That keeps the government off the people.
They are the first line of defense.
You guys are going to love the video footage that came out of that, and we will put that online as soon as Robert gets that footage cut, because that sheriff's panel is going to be great. And I know a lot of people had to leave because they had long drives to wherever. And it probably went 45 minutes or an hour.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, I finally left at 10 o'clock.
Did you?
Yeah. I mean, it was great.
We actually left, took some of the people who had come from the Bay Area back to their hotel, because she was also an exhibitor. So, we had that, too. We had exhibits. I mean, there was stuff to do all day. If you got there at, 3:30, 4 o'clock, there was something to do the whole time.
And some great local folks that provided food kiosks. So, you had hot coffee and snacks and things to eat.
Yeah, we had the sandwich lady out there. Yeah. That was awesome.
She was great. I bought a tuna sandwich from her at about 9:30 at night. She was packing up. So, I mean, the whole community came together. And I have to tell you that they were asking for a show of hands for people that had come from different areas. And the largest portion, other than the local residents, had come from the Bay Area.
Yeah, that was amazing, too, the distance.
Yeah, so it was really great to have those people there, because we all know that if you head much further south than Redding, Red Bluff, Corning, that the folks down there aren't hearing the whole story. So the fact that they all came up here to see it for themselves, they're staying with the ranchers overnight. I mean, they're getting the true taste of what's going on.
Yeah, and they're all heading out to Iron Gate Dam this morning, and they're going up to the Overlook so they can see what things look like a little bit. And they'll be going back to Jim Burney's restaurant there, the Fish Hook. Those guys are great. We all ate there when we went on the tour of the dams back in August. But it turned out to be a great event, but it was very, very ad hoc. It was fun. Like the exhibitors, we said,
it's just real life.
$20, bring a table, you know. And we had this. Yeah. We had Brian there with all the State of Jefferson gear. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, I brought back a bunch of State of Jefferson license plate frames, so they will be at the tea party Monday night.
You know what else was really interesting is there were some folks there that had a booth. The Libertarian Party had a booth, and they had a little test that you could take to determine whether you were liberal, conservative, or libertarian.
Get out!
It was really interesting.
Did you bring one home?
I didn't. Well, actually, no, we did. My husband took the test, and I'm sure we've got it with our paperwork, but come to find out, he's a libertarian.
Bring it tomorrow night.
I will.
We got to do that. That would be fun.
It would. Yeah, if we've still got it, I'll kind of recreate it, and we'll bring it. And, you kind of find out how you really feel about things.
We had guys there from the Record Searchlight. We had guys there from the Siskiyou Daily News. I know Stephen Greenhut was there from Cal Watchdog.
Yeah, he's from the Sacramento Bay Area. And, I got to tell you, he recently purchased a little tiny farm on 6 acres for his youngest child. And I kind of follow him on Facebook a little bit, and he's got enough animals to supply the ark. And so these private property rights.
Oops.
Yeah. And so this all these private property rights and the attack on these things should kind of resonate with him.
Absolutely.
Now that he's moved out of urban America.
All right, we're going to take a really quick break here, and then we're going to come back with Karen Bud Fallon. You guys are going to want to gear up on your coffee and be ready to go, because
she's awesome.
5 or 6 minutes we had last night, I thought, we so scored. 5 or 6 minutes just didn't cut the mustard.
Yeah, but we got a little taste of...
Bob?
I just wanted to chime in before we
chime away, Bob.
Off the topic of Cameron Gamble, in case listeners missed him on this program few weeks ago. He is going to be a guest on Carl and Linda's show tomorrow morning
at
8 o'clock.
That's right.
Oh, awesome.
Good.
And just in case you weren't thinking like kidnapped or whatever, what the heck? Why do I need to take a course like that? Tell you what, Project Taken is an amazing program. I would go to their website and look at their video. That'll give you a clue.
Yeah.
But last week alone, let's see, what was it, Wednesday, we had a 66-year-old woman shot an intruder that was coming into her house for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
And then apparently somebody was robbed at gunpoint down in Anderson on Friday.
And then that same person that robbed the person at gunpoint apparently broke into someone else's house.
So, I did not know that.
So hold on. Put your seatbelts on, folks. This is just the beginning.
Exactly. So there we go. We're going to be right back with you in 2 minutes here at We the People Radio. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Is that good?
Works for me.
I guess it's a 30-second clip.
Hey, welcome back to We the People Talk Radio. You're joining Aaron Elizabeth and Bob Martin. And we have a great guest today. We were in Yreka last night at the Defend Rural America event, nothing short of an event. And we had the opportunity to hook up with our guest today. I'm going to give you a little bio on her. Karen Bud Fallon is an attorney, and with her husband, Frank Fallon, is the owner of the Bud Fallon Law Offices located in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Before moving back to Wyoming, Karen served for 3 years in the Reagan administration, the U.S. Department of Interior, Washington, D.C., as a special assistant to the Assistant Secretary for Land and Minerals Management. She later served as a law clerk to the Assistant Solicitor for Water and Power. Karen has also worked as an attorney at Mountain States Legal Foundation, a conservative public interest legal foundation located in Denver, Colorado.
Okay, this is the part where I jump in because this is part of what she talked about. Karen represents private property owners, ranching and farming organizations, and local governments. She's assisted in local governments in asserting their rights of cooperation and coordination in federal agency decisions, and the rest is history. You can go to the website, wethepeopleradio.us. That page is up with all the information on Karen, and actually, if you want to listen to this program later, send it to other people, you can click on that button there that will say listen, kind of obvious, and fire that to somebody else. But meanwhile, Karen was a speaker last night for just, I don't know, it was very, very short, and gave us a great story on the background of the Constitution and a little insight on Daniel Webster. And so, good morning, Karen. We were hoping you'd do that for the listeners this morning, for the folks that weren't there.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning. Are you awake this morning?
We're not.
I got to stay at a great family of ranchers last night, and we did stay up quite late visiting.
Oh, well, I'm sure they were thrilled to have you there, Karen.
Yeah, you had a great beginning. It was only, you know, just a few minutes last night, but I know that if you could include some of that information that you shared last night, I know that our listeners would really like that.
And for our listeners, Karen was part of the panel of all of the county sheriffs from the surrounding areas, so she was speaking with them as well. So, Karen, what's the little tidbit on Daniel Webster? Most people don't know this.
As part of my legal training, I've spent a lot of time studying the Constitution and studying the Federalist Papers and other things surrounding the Constitution. I think you can't really understand the Constitution unless you look at the motivation and understand the history behind it. And one of the things that I found was that after the Constitution and the Bill of Rights were drafted, and as they were being adopted by the states, Daniel Webster prepared the first American dictionary. It was based off of Blackstone's Law Dictionary, which is a very famous English jurist. But if you look at the very front of his dictionary, he is very clear that the reason he's writing the dictionary is to assist the courts or stop the courts in changing the meaning of the terms in the Constitution.
And that's great, because I think most people would assume that the first dictionary was written to teach everybody how to spell.
No, it didn't have anything to do with spelling. It was, America is based on a system of precedent, so that you understand the law based on cases that have come before. And Daniel Webster was concerned that judges in this country, particularly the Supreme Court, would start adding meanings or changing the meanings in the Constitution. And so he wanted to provide them with precedence or a way to keep interpreting the terms in the Constitution the same, so that our rights would always be guaranteed by the Constitution.
Well, I guess that's worked out a little bit.
Yeah.
We seem to be taking quite a departure lately, but...
And, you know, Karen, another thing that really struck me last night when you were talking is when it comes to private property rights, that seems to be the end game for our state and federal agencies. And they, you know, they'll take an average person like one of the ranchers in the Scott Valley, and no one is a better steward of the person that's living off the land. And the video that we watched last night clearly demonstrated that the Scott Valley and the Yreka, the Siskiyou County Basin, is in much better shape because of the care that's been given to it over generations. And these state and federal agencies are coming in and basically saying to these people, you're not doing a good enough job, you're not caring for things the way you should. And you made a great point last night. You come from five generations in your own life. You're living in the house. You're the fifth generation to live in the house that you're living in. And I believe you, your family are cattle ranchers, is that correct?
Yes, we had a cow-calf operation west of Big Piney, Wyoming.
Okay. And so the thing that you said, and I just, it, I, you know, I couldn't get it out of my head last night, was, and I'm going to paraphrase, that if we are as bad as these state and federal agencies say we are, we would have put ourselves out of business four generations ago. And that's
well,
what
I think that's absolutely correct. There's a huge misconception related to both public land management and private land ownership that if you own it, you're going to abuse it and that you're not going to care for it for generations. And that somehow or the other, economic benefit from land is a bad thing. I'm not exactly sure where that comes from, but when people own the land, when people are from the land, there's a different feeling. You have a different connection to the land. And I don't at all know how to explain it, but if you've grown up on a farm or a ranch, you have a connection to that land that is deep and that is so strong. And you need to be able to take care of that land and use it to your economic benefit. Because a lot of times what happens is when they put these people out of business, the only choice they have is to sell it to development and all this wildlife habitat and all these things that they claim to care about are going to be worse off selling it to development, putting it in subdivisions, selling it for a parking lot somewhere. I mean, that's not protection of wildlife habitat.
Well, it just,
And people need to understand property is the basis for all of the freedoms that we have in this country. The Founding Fathers thoroughly and strongly believed that if you owned property, that was the basis for the Second Amendment right to bear arms, that was the basis for the First Amendment protections for free speech, for protection to be able to worship as you choose. It was all based on ownership of property, and for people in town, that ownership is still there. Whether you own your house or whether you have your business is your property. your ideas, your creative ideas. We had a filmmaker there last night. His creative thoughts, what he created, that's his property. And so infringing on property that's land is just going to increase more and more, and it is going to come and attack people in the cities, because what they have and what they think and what they do is private property as well.
That's an excellent point. And for the people, you know, when we talk sometimes about, you know, rural America, and we talk about the connection to the land, you don't have to be a farmer to understand connection to things that you own. I mean, we've all rented cars and we've all owned cars.
Right.
I mean, that's an easy...
Or even better yet, renting a house versus owning a home.
Same thing, but even if you've never owned a home, I mean, even if you had your own room as a kid, you have your own space somewhere. And you treat that differently than space that you borrow, I guess. The bad part of that whole valley up there is that there's such an overreach by federal and state. Do you see that everywhere else, Karen? I guess sometimes we feel like we're special. Maybe we're not.
Well, I think that everyone is special, but I got to tell you, we're seeing this throughout the country. I do a lot of work across America on these issues, and whether you're talking about overreaching by zoning in Minnesota or whether you're talking about the Everglades Restoration Project in Florida, which are all cases that I've worked on, it's the same kind of overreach. And sometimes that overreach is simply ridiculously restrictive zoning regulations. Sometimes the overreach is by the state government thinking they have to restore the Everglades. For people in the West, it's the federal government. You're seeing now this huge grab of power by unelected bureaucrats. And I don't think the Founding Fathers meant that, and it is really causing havoc across the nation. And it's all from the same root.
Which is
that bureaucrats and people who are working for the agencies seem to have lost the understanding that they work for the citizens. It's not that the citizens work for them. When I was working in Washington, D.C., one of the things that really struck me is that I was working on federal grazing regulations for ranchers. And my parents have a BLM and a Forest Service grazing permit, so that was pretty near and dear to my heart, and I was so excited to work on that project. But another guy who worked on the project was from Cleveland, and he was a very smart guy. He'd gone to Howard University, graduated from law school, the very top of his class, went to work at the Department of Interior, and this guy from Cleveland is writing BLM grazing regulations for the western United States. And no matter how smart he was, the guy didn't have a clue. He had never been west of Cleveland. And so when I came to Washington, I was really proud of going up on the ranch in Big Piney, and I put up maps in my office and had circles around where I grew up. When I told him how big our ranch was, to him, that was all the land in Wyoming. Because he grew up in a pretty impoverished situation. He was a really big guy, so he'd worked really hard to get out of his circumstances playing football. But to him, barbed wire was what was wound around the playground. It wasn't what kept your cattle in place. And so he just had no concept of the realities of the West. And here he is writing grazing regulations that my dad's got to live with when he didn't... I mean, he wasn't a bad guy. He didn't understand.
Sure. And how big is your ranch?
We have about 10,000 deeded acres.
Yeah, so I'm sure that was like kind of outside his realm. Was there any requirement that he go there and meet with people who actually did the kind of work that would be affected by his regulations?
No, not at all.
Wow. No wonder things.
I mean, that was sort of the whole genesis, and that experience really so struck me. That was kind of the genesis for this whole idea of of local governments getting involved, of cooperating or coordinating or whatever you want to call it with the federal agencies, because under the National Environmental Policy Act, the federal government is supposed to consider the environment, the economics, and the custom and culture of the citizens that live in an area before they make a decision.
That sounds like coordination.
And what we were finding 20 years ago when I started down this is that they were creating these regulations and they were coming up with these numbers when they'd never talked to or understood the true custom and culture of the local citizens. They didn't understand how the citizens used the environment. And these NEPA documents, these environmental impact statements, were just big paper exercises. And so that really started this whole thought process of how do we get these guys to truly consider local information, local data, the local citizens when they're making these decisions, and force them legally to deal with the realities of the citizens. And that's one of the genesis for the whole idea that the sheriffs were talking about last night in terms of coordination with local governments.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, I would really like you to kind of start where we left off last night when you talked about the difference between laws and things that people are required to do. The fact that the way that they limit us or don't limit us. You gave a very nice explanation, because a lot of these regulations that are coming down are being, I'm going to say sold to us, I'm going to use that term loosely, sold to us as something we must do, and yet there is quite a distinction, and I'd like you to tell folks about that. We will return with you here at We the People Radio on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
What the games people play now? Every night and every day now, never meaning what they say now, never saying what they mean. While they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they're covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine. Whoa, la da da.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Little Ted Nugent for you this morning.
Damn Yankees, don't tread on me.
At first, I was like, whoa, Bob, got the heavy metal land. What's happening there?
Oh, but it's Ted. Okay, so that's good.
And it's kind of thematic for the Tea Party.
There you go. Yeah, the don't tread on me part. Yeah. When you got to that part, I was like, oh, okay, I get it.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. Give us a call and tell us what you think about Bob's music, 605-7501. We're streaming and chatting live at wethepeopleradio.us.
We do take requests.
We do. And we're back with Karen Bud Fallon, private property rights attorney from Wyoming. We have her captive up in Siskiyou County for another, 5 hours or 4 hours or something, Karen?
Yeah, just about that.
Caught you on your fly through. Talk to people a little bit about laws. You had made some really strong statements last night that I thought were excellent about what people have to do and what perhaps they don't have to do.
Yeah, because isn't there legal and then unlawful difference between the two? Karen?
Well, the point I was making last night, and I think that just over... the last 200 years, I'm afraid that the American citizens have kind of forgotten the basis for this country and what their relationship is with the government. If you look at the Constitution, if you look at the original statutes and what the Founding Fathers meant, the Constitution was not a document for the citizens. It was a document to stop the government from taking the rights of the citizens. And if you think about it, that is a really important distinction. Bureaucrats federal agencies, state government workers, whoever you're talking about, have to have a law, a statute somewhere that allows them to do their job, that allows them to do whatever they want to do, that allows them to come on somebody's property, that allows them to do monitoring, that allows them to close roads, that allows them to take down dams, whatever that is, they have to have a statute allowing them to do that. On the other hand, citizens don't have to have a rule or a regulation to do what they want. They can do anything as long as it's not prohibited by statute. And once you understand that distinction, then people need to understand that when a federal agency or a state agency or someone from the government comes in and tells you something to do on your property or gives you a law or rule, you are perfectly within your rights to say, I want to see your statutory authority for your position. And they have to be able to produce that. And so the whole idea is that you don't have arbitrary actions by some faceless bureaucrat somewhere. They have to have authority for telling you what to do. And what I encourage people to do is to ask. You have the right to find out what authority they're asking for. And the legal term is called color of law. And you have the right to find out what the law is when the agencies come and ask you to do something or tell you you're prohibited from doing something. And we've got, you know, if we can start understanding ourselves that important point and enforcing that, then I think we're going to start moving back toward what the Founding Fathers meant and what the Constitution meant.
And don't you...
And I'm just, you know, when you... All of this eroded over time. A lot of people, I think, were just... I mean, we were working, we were providing for our families, we were trying to make a better life for our kids. And so slowly we just stopped thinking about our relationship with the government, and now the whole thing kind of has turned upside down, and we need to start rethinking about that relationship and enforcing that relationship.
Now, Karen, do you feel like these agencies are kind of blurring the line between what they should be doing and what they are doing in terms of how they're dealing with landowners? And in other words, are they pushing the limit a little bit?
Oh, I think in a lot of cases they are. I mean, as an attorney, they teach you not make big blanket statements. You know, we look at facts and we look at cases. But as I do cases throughout the country, we're starting to see that more and more, where you've got unelected bureaucrats who are just sort of creating things out of thin air and pushing their power, and they don't have the rule of law or the color of law behind them that support their actions. And, you know, I'm not advocating that citizens, you know, start, you know, taking the law in their own hands. But I think it's very important to find out, do you really have the authority to tell me what you're telling me? And we have not been asking for that, and I think we need to start.
Well, I think that they come on and they, you know, especially onto people's property, and... you know, with fish and game is always my hot button, and they have all these projects that they want to do, and they need to get on people's land to check for fish barriers. So if they're fish and game and they're supposed to be checking that stuff, is there a law that lets them go do that, or is that part of their mandate, or how does that work? It's kind of...
But that's what you've got to find out. I mean, because all cases are different. And it, in some cases, they do have the authority. In some cases, they don't. But in every case, you should find out the authority. And if they can't show you what the authority is, then they don't have the authority unless you grant it.
And it isn't just in their rule book. It's actually a legislated piece of law that was made by the people who actually represent all of us.
Well, that's where the I mean, that's one of the problems that we have now, is you've got all these interpretations and and policies and handbooks and manuals, and that paper has just seemed to have exploded, and you need to trace that back. If there is a adopted statute by a legislature that gives them the authority and their regulation fairly implements that statute, then they have the authority. But if this is just some sort of a policy or a, you know, great idea that somebody had, then they don't have the authority. They don't have enforcement authority. And so then while still it's your property and it's certainly your choice to either allow them or not allow them to do what they're asking, you need to understand that it's your choice. This is, it's not just a blanket, oh, absolutely, we'll let you on and then live with the consequences later, because once you open that door, it is really hard to close it again.
Yeah, recently down here in the Shasta County area, we've had requests of landowners who live on creeks for the fish and game to come on their property and check for fish barriers. And, you know, you've got some of the people that are thinking, oh, well, that's a good idea because, you know, I want to help out with the fish. And other people who have been, especially those of us that have been dealing with the issues in Siskiyou County, are going, no!
Yeah, and these
don't,
people
don't let them anywhere on your ground.
Yeah, you never ever say yes to that.
So, as an attorney, what would you say?
I would say if somebody comes to my door and wants to be on my property, I would say, please show me the statute or requirement that allows you to be on my property.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the first question I would ask.
So volunteering is a bad idea.
That information, then you can fairly make a decision as to, well, yes, you know, by statute they get on, and so, you know, I'm not advocating that you break the law. And if they don't have some statutory authority, then you have the right to make the decision to let them on or not.
But you made a good point. Once you do, you've opened a door that you might not be able to close again.
Oh, I think that's correct. But I am always very careful to say I would never let them on my property, because the truth is it's not my choice either. If it's your property, it's your choice. And you need to have all the information so that you can exercise the right choice for you.
I think that's an excellent point. Okay, Terry, we left you on hold forever. We're going to take a really quick break here, come right back, and we've got a question for you on the line, Karen. So you've got 2 minutes to grab some coffee, and we'll be right back. We'll be right back with you here at We the People Radio on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Don't let them kick your neighbor off his land. This is where we gotta make a stand. The stewards of this land are mom and pop. The government couldn't run a soda shop. I said freedom, freedom. Watch it slipping away. I said freedom, freedom. A little bit more each day. Say I want a revolution. I say you need to pay attention.
And if you're not familiar with our own Mike Smith from Corning, he's a great patriot, part of Big Dog Music Productions. Anyway, you're listening to We the People Radio. Give us a call at 605-4567. We will leave you on hold forever, like we have with Terry, who informed us that he has been able to take a shower and eat a complete breakfast
while waiting
on hold. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, ladies. How y'all doing?
Fine.
We're discombobulated. Okay, we're just going to admit it.
I don't blame you, Aaron. I mean, you probably got home after Sal and I did, and we got home about 1 o'clock in the morning, and you were still going strong. Thanks for the hard work there, kid.
We
did a great job, Aaron.
We had a great event up there. It was funny. Bill and I, the last thing I saw was the little red clock on the ceiling said 1:57, and I'm like, okay, we're good.
Good.
Yeah, it was a lot of work, but I think it was worth it. Definitely worth it. Anyway, the question I have is that what can we really do? I mean, that one gentleman was talking about the $25,000 fine that he could possibly get if they find a dead coho, you know, in the water that he uses. And it's amazing to me that these different bureaus and these different agencies can inflict regulations, which in essence is law, which is a fine. And our bureaucrats seem to be absolutely powerless. Worse, not just powerless, but a situation where they're really not giving us the information that we need, like you just gave us on what we could say to someone who knocks on our door and wants to take a look at our property. That's something we really need to get the word out on. And apparently last night, the venue we had with the 8 sheriffs, it was wonderful. All the information, at least 600 people, probably more than that. The record searchlight was there, and there wasn't one peep in the paper today.
Yeah, it's the first thing I looked for. Maybe they're saving it for Sunday.
Today, yeah, well, isn't today Sunday?
I'm just kidding. Gotcha.
But anyway, that's my question. How do we do that? How do we motivate our legislative people to stop these agencies from making all these regulations and virtual taxes on people and making all these jumps and because they're not elected? How do we do that and motivate our legislative people that we elect to help us with that? Because that seems to be the problem. They're either oblivious to it or we're not getting help. So maybe you can...
So what do you think, Karen?
Well, I do agree that that is a problem. If you look at sort of the history of the statutes that have been passed over time, initially those statutes were very specific and had very strict rules on what you could do and what you couldn't do and what was allowed and wasn't allowed. And the legislature really seemed to take its responsibility, I guess I won't say more seriously, but they were much more involved in the details of how things would work. Around, it seems, just in my study, it seems around, you know, the 1970s, all of a sudden these legislatures started passing laws that were basically, here is a good idea, and we are going to give the bureaucrats the authority to implement it through rules. And so all of a sudden now you started seeing these big open-ended statutes that just said, you know, we're going to protect motherhood and apple pie, and bureaucrats were left on how to implement it. And they started adopting all these rules that were so far off the course, but they still sort of fit within this statute. So I guess the first thing I would say is that we've got to make the legislature understand that you represent us and you are the one that needs to make these hard decisions. You can't just pass a statute that is so broad that you can drive a Mack truck through it. You have to decide what the statute is, because that's what we elected you for. We didn't elect you just to argue with each other and to pass these sort of broad, feel-good, you know, we're going to protect the environment statutes. If you want to protect the environment, the legislature needs to decide how, not a bunch of bureaucrats that are not elected.
Well, you know,
and
a way
the second
where
thing
you have
we need to do
law,
is start looking at some of these regulations.
Sunglasses.
Uh-oh.
Basically, you couldn't patent the sunglass because the sunglass basically has already been patented. But you could put a Jepson patent in and have a patent pending on, say, you're going to change the arm of that sunglass. Couldn't that be sort of reflected in the same thing in law? Because what you're saying is it's so broad that they give this broad spectrum, but there's no specific way that they can sort of pinpoint really what these agencies can do. So what you're saying is they should be more specific and only hold to those specifics of what they can do and can't do?
Absolutely. I mean, look at what they've done with this, you know, the Clean Air Act. The Clean Air Act says we're going to regulate stuff to protect the air.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was passed in the 1960s. Because of better technology and all that stuff, the EPA is now down to regulating dust. They've put out these new rules now that are at least have not gone in final, but it would require a rancher to get a permit to work cows in a corral. which is really silly where I live, because there's only 500 people in the town that I live in. And so, you know, requiring my dad to get a dust permit to work cattle in a corral is just ridiculous. But the statute just says we're going to have clean air. And so the EPA has come up with just amazing amounts of rules that fit within this huge broad spectrum, because the legislature abdicated its authority to say how it was going to get to clean air.
Thank you very much.
you got your answer.
And we have a moment of radio silence.
Bye.
Thanks, Terry.
Bye, Terry. Great job, you guys. They were part of the contingent of exhibitors last night. Terry was getting Second Amendment hats on everybody's head and military caps and stuff. That was a great thing, too, you know, to see everybody pull together and we look like the ragtag army that we are. Karen, we got a couple of minutes here before we hit the news break at 9 o'clock. What were your thoughts about last night?
Oh, I thought that last night was fabulous. For way too long, it seems like we all just sort of fought our little battles by ourselves, and ranchers, I got to tell you, are the worst, because we are the most fiercely independent group ever, We're not good at all at asking our neighbors for help and saying, yes, we have a problem. And I thought it was really heartening to see people actually coming together from all sorts of different walks of life to recognize that, yes, we have a problem. Because I think that the first way we can solve our problem is to figure out that it's not just a little Siskiyou County problem or a little Sublette County, Wyoming problem or a Houston County, Minnesota problem. It's all stemming from the same problem, and to once you recognize, you can look for a solution.
And you know, the thing is, Karen, that the one point that I think everyone finally understood and is beginning to understand is that Siskiyou County is the prototype for this private land takeover by the state and federal agencies. And if they are successful in accomplishing their goals in Siskiyou County, then it will spread.
Sure. They've already got sites on Shasta County. We've already got people from the USDA. What is up with the USDA? Karen, do you deal with them at all?
Yes.
I guess we only have like a minute. When we come back, maybe we can talk about that some more. But USDA is popping up everywhere with these happy little dog and pony shows about how we all just want to make our community better, and we're going to institute all these little programs. And right behind it comes this wave of bureaucracy and regulation and land grabbing and conservancies.
Well, they were right. It all sounds benign, you know. Treasured landscapes. Of course we have treasured landscapes, but the devil is in the details, and you have to really understand what it means, not just listen to the words and feel good about the words.
Yeah, I don't know if you followed our AB 32, California's answer to cap and trade, but that was a feel good that is not going to feel good when people start getting their bills. I'll tell you that. That is going to be one painful ordeal.
Yeah, they think they're paying a lot for food now.
Yeah, well, and our power bills are due to double under that program at the rate they're going. We're gonna take a quick break here for the news. It is time.
Okay,
we're taking it right now. Okay, bye.
Grab a cup of coffee.
We'll
come
back
in 5 minutes.
Hit it, Bob. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hello. if you're just tuning in, you are tuning in to We the People Radio. You're here with your hosts, Elizabeth Woodward, Aaron Ryan, and our great music guy, Bob Martin. If you want to give us a call, the number is 605-4567. We're streaming and chatting at wethepeopleradio.us, and today we're all things private property rights.
With Karen Bud Fallon. And Bob's more than just the music guy. See, yes. Bob's got all the dials and the buttons, and he actually has control over the phone. We pretty much just sit over here, and it's probably better if we don't touch anything.
Yeah, we all know what happens when I do. Yeah.
Most importantly, I have control of the 7-second delay dump button.
Oh, yeah, you know, one day we're going to do that just for fun so we can all hear what it sounds like. We should have done it when Elizabeth's computer was on.
Yeah, that would have been a good time.
That would have been great.
That would have been good.
Okay, so we're done.
Then you can tell us if the fireworks went off on your radio.
There you go. And Karen's like, God, I hope they're not going to drink any more coffee, for God's sake. We started out all slow. We're starting to speed up now, Karen. Okay, so I forget what I wanted you to talk to us about. Did you remember? I remember there was an idea. What was that? Anyway, I can't remember. Somebody in the chat room, please throw us a bone. What were we talking about? We've gone kind of through the regulation idea. We've kind of kicked that around, and we have a lot of things being enforced out here. Hey, Karen, do you know about the fish screens and that kind of stuff? Or do you guys have that where you are?
Well, we don't have that where you are, but I've been involved in some of the litigation with National Wildlife Federation, represented by Earth Justice.
Ooh, Earth Justice, that's ominous.
Yeah.
In front of Oregon Federal District Judge Redding, that are working on the National Wildlife Federation and those tribes' goals are to remove dams. The litigation has been going on for, I believe, 4 years now, and the government has paid those attorneys millions of dollars to continue the legislation. Judge Redding keeps rejecting the biological opinion, which means that we continue to stay in court, and I don't believe that the environmental groups will be happy until Judge Redding orders removal of dams.
Okay. Oh, really? Wow. And you, that kind of reminded me of the one thing that you were saying last night, that all... Do we have a caller?
No, Don, just, I'm glad somebody's firing on all eight cylinders this morning. Don just wanted to remind me that we were talking about the USDA before the top of the hour.
Thank you.
Yes.
And their tentacles.
Yeah.
I mean, they give home loans, for goodness sakes.
Don was at the meeting last night, by the way.
Oh, great. Don, you're a rock star. Thank you. We need supervision at all times.
Thank you so much, Don.
Unless you're from the government, in which case we don't need supervision at all times. Karen, yeah, follow up that thread with USDA. I think most of us think that they're just a label on food.
Oh, no. The USDA is actually one of the biggest departments. They deal with food safety issues. They deal with... That's the agency that houses the United States Forest Service. So all of our national forests come under USDA management. They deal with farm subsidies. They deal with EQIP programs. They deal with CRP programs. It is a absolutely huge federal agency with areas that you would be surprised are managed by them.
So they're kind of the advanced team. So when they start showing up, the rest of the guys are going to start popping out of the box right behind them.
Well, it sort of depends. One of the things that they don't deal with is endangered species. That is all managed by the Department of Interior, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And that is another whole different bailiwick. But it all has the same problem. You have... The Endangered Species Act is one of those glorious federal acts that was signed by Nixon that said, you know, we're going to protect all these truly threatened or endangered species. When he signed it, he believed we were talking about bald eagles and majestic creatures. I read something years and years later that where he regretted signing the Endangered Species Act because now we're using it to protect worms and bugs and snakes and spiders and
ate
and
fish.
Stuff that was never even envisioned originally by Congress. The Endangered Species Act hasn't been reauthorized by Congress in years, but they keep appropriating money, so the act is sort of de facto continuing, and people are losing their property rights based simply on the fact that some bureaucrat listed some bird or bug or something that may feel like living on their property someday.
Well, do they have to... But, okay, you said that they keep reauthorizing it, so could it go... I thought we had to repeal it or something.
No, it's actually been... The act itself actually had a repeal clause in it called the sunset clause. And so the act was only supposed to be in place for, I believe it was 10 years. But as long as, through the appropriations process, they keep putting money into it, then the act is going to live on until Congress finally says, we've spent enough money. Enough is enough.
Is there some reason we're still appropriating that money? do they know? Are they aware that if they stopped paying for it, it would go away?
You know, I think some of them are. One of the big problems that we have is that you've got people in the Congress that they think that the act sounds so wonderful because it's not affecting people in their district. You know, the guys that represent people in New York City have never had an endangered species in their district. They have no idea what that means. And so they continue to authorize it because it feels good. It sounds good. It sounds like you're protecting the environment. You're protecting all these wonderful species out there. And then you have, you know, fairly powerful environmental lobbyists that understand the power of the act and understand that if we just keep listing species, we will be able to continue taking property and holding property. And so at this point, we just have never had the votes to be able to stop spending the money.
Wow. Well, that's an exciting thing for people to press on their congressional representatives.
Hey, and Karen, somebody in the chat room, I wanted you to kind of address what you mentioned last night, where the federal government pays the environmental agencies or environmental groups to turn around and sue the government at the expense of the taxpayers. Wow, that sounds like a vicious circle.
Oh, it's a horrible circle. There's two basic acts by which groups can receive money from the federal government for attorney's fees. And like so much else, the original Equal Access to Justice Act was actually signed into law by President Reagan. But originally the act was meant for if you were a Social Security beneficiary and you had to sue the government to get your benefits, then Congress thought, well, they should not have to pay more in attorney's fees than they're going to get for their benefits. And so the act was passed with the original intention of simply putting people back in the same position they were before they had to sue the government. And, you know, that in and of itself is a very laudable goal. So what we have discovered is that in 1995, Bill Clinton signed an act called the Paperwork Reduction Act, and one of the pieces of paper that was reduced was then accounting for all these fees. And so litigation has now exploded, and environmental groups have figured out how to completely abuse that system so that environmental group litigation can sue the government, get paid $650 an hour for suing the government.
Ugh.
And then simply turn the money back around to re-sue the government. There's so many things that are wrong with that system. I mean, for one of them, most of the time the litigation these environmental groups sue over is process. They're not suing over whether a landowner is abusing his land. What they're suing over is whether the federal government jumped through enough hoops, whether they got all their I's dotted and T's crossed in writing an environmental impact statement under the National Environmental Policy Act. Under the Endangered Species Act, to get a species listed, you have to simply file a petition. You don't ever have to have seen the species. You don't have to know anything about the species. You just file a petition with the Fish and Wildlife Service or the National Marine Fisheries Service if you're talking about salmon and other Andromeda species. The Fish and Wildlife Service or National Marine Fisheries Service only has 90 days to respond. That was written into the Act. The problem is that groups like Center for Biological Diversity and Wild Earth Guardian in the last year have filed thousands of petitions to list species. And there's simply no way the Fish and Wildlife Service can deal with all those petitions in 90 days. But if they wait till the 91st day, you can sue, you get paid, and you're simply suing over the fact that they missed the 90 days. They're not suing over whether this creature ought to be listed. They're suing over process. And so you've got this huge vicious cycle with these groups making hundreds of thousands of dollars to simply fund more litigation. I mean, I am convinced that these groups are as capitalistic as I am. They just don't admit it. I think this is a huge money-making scheme. I think that they've received millions of dollars from the government, and I think it is absolutely time that we reform the Act, because I believe that veterans' benefits and Social Security claimants, those guys ought to have their fair attorney's fees returned, but not a group like National Wildlife Federation or Sierra Club, whose net worth is $56 million. They do not need their attorney's fees reimbursed.
Yeah, no kidding. Jeez, what a racket. I mean, I think this is some of the stuff people don't realize. Is that posted anywhere? I mean, is that easy information to get, or do you really have to do some digging? You threw out some numbers last night about the number of lawsuits and some of the amounts of money.
We've actually done most of the research, because like I said, when we started on this project a couple of years ago, the first thing we figured out is the government has not accounted for a dime of this money since 1995. And we filed Freedom of Information Act requests with the Justice Department, with Treasury Department, searching to figure out how much money we were talking about. Because I was guessing it was quite a bit of money, I had no idea how much. And because the federal government doesn't track it, we decided to. So there's a computer database called PACER, which allows you to look at all the federal court documents throughout all the federal courts in the United States. So we just started picking environmental groups, and then we would pick a court, and we would figure out, having to go case by case, it's actually, you know, I mean, the government would be easy, but to sit in Cheyenne, Wyoming and do it was fairly hard. So we started trying to figure out how much money we were talking about, and I can... Let me give you examples. Since we're in California, we did look at the California courts to see how much money had come out of there. Just for the Center for Biological Diversity, in California, the California federal courts, between 2000 and 2009, the Center for Biological Diversity filed, just in California, 149 cases, and they received attorney's fees of $3,626,000 in attorney's fees just in California in 9 years. The Sierra Club, exactly the same time frame, they received $7 million in attorney's fees just in California.
but we have to lay off police and fire and let criminals out, and, you know, I mean, if people want to know where their money is going,
listen to this show.
Yeah, this would be a good place to start. Good grief. We've got to take a really swift break, and we have Gerald on hold, who's going to have time now to take a shower and
have breakfast.
Sorry. This whole late night, you know, defend rural America stuff is just messing with us on Sunday morning. But we will be right back with you in 2 minutes here on We the People Radio. You're listening to KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
You've already said we are free.
you tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. Hey, if you're looking for timely breaks and complete sentences and
good spelling on the chat,
and good spelling on the chat, this is not the day. We were out late last night defending rural America. So we are back with our great speaker, Karen. Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Yes, ma'am.
And there's Gerald.
He's had breakfast. He's had breakfast in his shower. Gerald, you get a question for Karen.
Morning.
I'm holding off on the shower. I'm getting ready to join Wall Street people up there.
Oh, right on. Right on. That's
Oh, you know, just a little caveat. I was reading on a website just a few minutes ago that Occupy Wall Street folks have a finance committee. And so, listen to this. So they get the people that are on the streets to solicit donations from people walking by. And then they turn it into their finance committee, who then doles it out to all of the people, you know, for personal items and, you know, whatever. Well, apparently the people on the street are having a hard time getting accountability from their finance committee. And the finance committee has like $500,000 in their bank account, and they won't share. Neener, neener, neener.
Is that socialism or crony capitalism?
If it wasn't so sad, it would actually be funny.
So, yeah, you get what you ask for, right?
Well, I think they should probably spend some of that on, you know, some kind of air spray.
I was thinking haircuts and shaving.
That would work, too. One of the things I called in about, guys, is...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Back to that. Sorry. It's your dime. Shoot.
Is this conflict between state and federal appear in the area to the east of Hilltop that area there where they have some commercial, a lot of commercial stuff going on. There's a sign, and some homeless bats have made that their home. But the problem is the guano comes down onto the sidewalk, and they've got a huge pile, and it's starting to almost block the sidewalk. Well, the city came along and told the building owner there he had to clean that up. And the feds came over and said, don't you dare touch that. And I think that we're seeing more and more of this type of confusion between the state and federal agencies. And this thing down here with the bats is just silly to me. But still, the federal government is using their power to stop this guy from even making his place of business a safe place for the public to walk down that sidewalk. So I wanted to bring that to your attention, see if you could comment on it.
How ridiculous. Karen, what do you got for us?
Well, I'm assuming that these bats are somehow or the other protected, and that is just one of thousands of examples of where the Endangered Species Act has just totally gone haywire, and Congress is not willing to do anything about it. I mean, Congress is the body, the only body that can change that act. When a species is listed as threatened or endangered, the federal government doesn't even have to know how many of the little critters are out there. They don't have to go out and do any kind of count. The only thing that they can consider is
does somebody think there used to be more back then than there are now? Or does it look like all the places their habitat is shrinking? Those are the only two considerations. There's no economic consideration. There's no consideration about do we really even need whatever this species is. There's no consideration of displaced people. It's simply based on this historical review, and the agency doesn't even have to know how many of the creatures are.
Well,
so getting something listed on the Endangered Species Act, quite frankly, is just not that hard. But once something
that extend
is listed,
to their,
then,
to their,
you know, havoc begins. Because then they designate critical habitat. The Obama administration has announced that not only are they going to designate habitat where the creature is now, they want to expand that to be habitat where the creature may feel like living someday, which is going to be a massive, massive land take over something that we don't even know is going to happen in the future. And once the critical habitat is designated or once the species live there, then the agency's got the right to regulate your use.
Well, does this extend to the bat's waste on the sidewalk?
Well, maybe they think bat waste is full of endangered bugs.
Good one.
I have no idea. But what
if someone slips down and
is taking their sheltering, nesting, or foraging habitat, even if they inhabited buildings or man-made places, then basically once they've taken it up, the landowner is totally powerless to do anything about it.
Well, it seems that there needs to be an eminent domain settlement between the state and the feds. So, I don't know. I just think this is comical, but that guano on that sidewalk just looks terrible. It looks like we don't have the sense to maintain our properties here. So, anyway, thank you very much.
The real problem is that we don't even know if that would hurt the bat or help the bat. I mean, there's, even if you think that this bat needs to live wherever it's living on this guy's sign, then all management is just simply over. And the federal government is able to trumpet. And under the Endangered Species Act itself is where the $25,000 a day fine comes in. That wasn't a regulation. Congress wrote that in statute. But when they wrote that in statute, it's because they thought we were protecting bald eagles. I don't think anybody had the vision to know how far that act would go, and so far we haven't seen Congress to have the stomach to do anything about it.
Yeah, that's very discouraging. I'm retired right now, but people that's trying to make a living, and you just don't see the business activity in these places that we used to have. And now these guys are trying to figure out how to take care of this stupid little problem they have down there. And all three, the owner and the state and the feds, all have to get their 2 cents in. And right now the bottom line is the guano's on the walk.
Thank you, Gerald.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys. Wonderful show.
Hey, Gerald, you've really spiced up the chat room. Now we've got all sorts of a discussion about night ops and people are gunning for the bats, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you can't see behind this sign because the bats come in and go up behind this big sign. And so the guano, interestingly, is the link of the sign. So they got them a nice, condo up there. So it's an amazing place. You guys have a wonderful day, and I hope someday that we can figure out a way to straighten out a lot of this stuff, because we all have to live here. And I think the human species is, to my mind, a little bit more important than some of this. So.
Yeah, that makes you a hater, but have a nice day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, Gerald. All right, we need to take a quick break here. We're going to be back with Karen, and I defy you to follow up on the bat thing, anyone out there. You can reach us at 605-4567. We're streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back with you here at the home of Free Fire Media.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
A serious subject and turn it into something sadistic like We the People Radio.
Gerald brought up the bats and somehow it turned into Saturday Night Fever.
Oh, we had an assist from the people in chat on that one because someone pointed out that BG in this case stood for Bat Guano, which in turn inspired all of the bad Saturday Night Fever jokes.
We're talking about private property rights, believe it or not.
Karen, only we could make the demise of America seem humorous. Whoops, yeah, and disconnect you at the same time.
Yeah, you got to find a little humor in all that's coming down around our ears. So you are joining We the People Radio. Give us a call at 605-4567.
I'm afraid we lost Karen there. I'll get her back momentarily.
Everybody's like, they were goofing off and they disconnected her. No, we didn't.
I think
really.
She probably heard Night Fever and hung up.
She's like, what the heck kind of show am I on anyway? Uh-oh, he disconnected us too. So Bob's touching all the buttons right now. Bob's over there just like a machine touching all the buttons. Well, can you call Karen back?
Let's try this button and see what it does. Okay.
Standby.
Bob's been working here.
Okay. Let's.
This
all right.
This is his first show.
We have a second here while we're calling Karen back. Seriously, I have 21 stoplights between our house and this station. And on Sunday morning, I got to tell you, okay, on any day, that's just absolutely insane. So we're trying to cut the lights, you know, get them to go just right. This silver minivan blows by me on two wheels. I'm serious. Goes hauling up the Pine Street Hill. It's like, what a maniac. So we get up. So, of course, we all get stuck at a stoplight. I look over. Who's driving?
Bob the engineer.
So I honk at him and he waves at the guy behind him. I'm like, no, Bob, I'm over here. We knew it was going to be that kind of morning. Bob wasn't even at the Rural America event. Oh, hey, look, someone's calling.
I hope it's Karen.
Maybe it's Karen. Oh, my gosh, you guys, I'll tell you what.
So we're talking about federal and state agencies. You know, they don't like each other very much, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's
they all have the same goal, is to take away private property rights, but apparently they have different ideas on the methods to do that. But they frequently don't get along.
Okay, I got the call back.
She's back.
Karen, you're
hey,
back.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
We played Saturday Night Fever and we threw you into orbit. We are so sorry. Okay, so on a serious note, where did you actually give us a spot where we can go look up some of that the amount of environmental lawsuit money that's blowing out of our coffers?
Yes, we actually posted all that stuff on my law firm office website. There's a button called Attorney Fees Equal Access to Justice, and we have all of the research we have as well as the raw data for the states that we looked at because it's quite time consuming. We only looked at 19 states and the District of Columbia, and then we looked at 13 environmental groups, and we came up with $36 million.
Holy.
Just what I have got hard numbers on that I can count.
And Karen, for our listeners, put out your website. What is that?
It's www.budsallon. It's my last name with no hyphen. B as in boy, U, D, D, F as in Frank, A, L, E, N.com.
Now, do you primarily deal with larger entities, or are you defending small landowners? I mean, primarily
we do both.
Okay.
It's all based on private property rights. And so we work on anything dealing with, you know, for example, eminent domain issues or land lease issues, but it's for the surface owner is where our practice has been built. We've got 6 attorneys in the firm, and that's all any of us do.
And I would imagine business is at a brisk clip these days.
Yes, it is. It's fairly sad to say. I laugh. Well, I guess I don't really laugh, but it's been interesting to be involved in this for so long. As I said, I grew up on a ranch with both BLM and Forest Service permits, and as a kid, I remember when my dad would have a conflict with the Forest Service, the district ranger would come out to the house, sit down at the kitchen table, my mom would make a pot of coffee, and my dad and the district ranger would argue, and sometimes there was yelling, and they'd work out their difference right there, sitting at our kitchen table at the house. And by the time it was over, then there was a decision. And that was the end of it. And so I think if I would have tried to start this law firm doing this 20 years ago, it wasn't necessary. Because you could just work things out, and instead of looking at big national issues, they'd look at the piece of land. They'd look at, on the ground. And now you've got bureaucrats that are just hiding behind things. It's hard to get them out to look at the land. It's hard to make a decision about the land. They rotate these bureaucrats so fast that they don't ever get to be part of the community and part of the people, so they don't understand the nature of the community. And the one thing that we all have to understand is that all this land is different. And what is good and what should happen in Siskiyou County is not the same as what should happen in Houston County, Minnesota, which is where I've got several clients. And it's not the same as what should happen in Pennsylvania or Florida or Sublette County, Wyoming. So we've totally lost our local focus. Now we all just talk about national and United Nations and, global warming. It's all so big that we've lost our focus on the land. And that's really where the focus ought to be.
Well, if it's big like that, you can't wrap your hands around it. So if they keep throwing these gigantic things at us that require some sort of gigantic fix, then people at the local level kind of give up, which I would imagine was probably the idea.
So, Karen, how often does the little guy win?
Well, I think the little guy can win. But I think you have to win smart. One of the problems we have is that people just, they try to ignore the problem for so long and the agencies keep building the record. They keep building the record based on this and that, and you don't have the rancher in the beginning building the record on his side, responding to these issues. Ranchers are so busy trying to take care of their animals and feed their families, and the same is true for anyone who's trying to make a living, that, they tend to think, oh, this won't happen to me, or if I just ignore it, it will go away, or they don't deal with it right away. And it is possible to win these things, that you've got to deal with it up front, you've got to document your efforts, you've got to have, you can't just say, I don't want you here because it's not right. You've got to know what your rights are. You've got to build your record, and you've got to show what is best for the land. And that does take work and effort, But that's the way we win these cases. There's no big silver bullet out there that's going to fix all these problems. The environmental movement and the federal government took away our rights one little bite at a time, and that's the way we're going to get them back.
Is there any potential for the people in Siskiyou County, just based on what you've seen, is there any potential for them to sue to stop the dam removal?
Well, right now there's no final decision on the dam removal. They're doing the environmental impact statement, and I believe the comment period ends in November. But I strongly believe that the sheriffs, that the local government, that the people need to do is to build their record on why they should not remove those dams. You can't just say, don't remove the dam. You know, when we saw that film last night, it sounded like there were lots of facts. There was, you know, you have scientists on your side, but that doesn't do you any good unless you get it into the agency record and you're prepared to fight. One of the things that I have found over the last 20-some years of doing this is the best way to avoid court is to be prepared to go. And to let the agencies know that you're prepared to go. And to do that, you have to have data and information. So I would tell the people in Siskiyou County that they need to get together, they need to write comments, they need to oppose the dam, they need to put it in the environmental impact statement, and then force the federal agencies to respond to them. And then I think they can tell, you know, even if it's this collaborative stakeholder group, it's still, the final decision comes down to the federal government, and the federal government has to have a reason for doing everything that it does. So force them to make a decision, and if they don't have a valid reason or they have ignored the local government, you can take them to court and stop the removal. But you got to start now. You can't just wait till a bad decision and then get all flustered up and say, oh my gosh, we have to go to court tomorrow, because you can't win those kind of cases.
Sure. How do they get that into the record? Is it just a matter of, I mean, if you have actual scientific data, you can't do it in a 3-minute comment period. How do they get that into the EIR?
You can write letters. They have to respond to all those written comments. They have to consider them. Mm. And the important thing for local governments is that they have to actually include locally elected official comments with the environmental impact statement the entire way along. And the most important is if the federal government doesn't agree with the position of the local government, they have to say why on the record. They have to have a valid reason. They can't just say, we don't agree with the local government. They have to have a valid reason why, and they are supposed to comply with and follow local land use plans unless the local government wants violates federal law. There's actually lots of authority for local governments to be involved in federal agency decisions.
And how do they do that?
One of the things that I think people are finally starting to recognize is that it's not enough just to call the federal government and say, I want you to listen to me. You have to have information. You have to tell them what you want. You have to tell them why. You have to build your record.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. We're going to take a super quick break, and when we come back, someone reminded us on the chat room about your comment, Karen, about the Constitution and what that means and how that stands as the foundation for everything else. We want to make sure and fit that in here before the end of the hour. We will be back with you in 2 minutes here at the... I don't know, the silliest place on earth, I think. We the People Radio.
Some days more than others.
Yeah, some days, like today. Here at KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
I don't need you to worry for me, because I'm all right. I don't want you to tell me it's time to come home. I don't care what you say anymore, this is my.
Advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Every breath you take.
You're joining the last few minutes of We the People Radio. That song kind of tells me that what happened to America?
They're watching us.
Every move we make, every breath we take.
And this morning, I hope they were on their game because you know what? There's a lot going on. Oh, you got to get up pretty early. Hey, so Karen, we've got like 10 minutes. And wanted you to give people the little snippet you had about the Constitution, and that was awesome last night, by the way. Thank you.
Well, one of the things that I explained is that the word Constitution isn't really all that special. Constitution means foundation. And it's like a foundation or anything else. If you have a house, you have to put it on a strong foundation. Otherwise, you don't have a house. The Constitution is the foundation of this country. And unless we work to keep that foundation strong, we are going to lose this country. And I think that slowly over time, people stop thinking about the fact that they have to continually support their foundation. You don't ignore the foundation of your house. If there's a problem, you fix it. And I think for a long time we ignored the foundation of this country. I think we have to now look at the cracks and go back and fix it. I don't think it's too late. As I travel around the country and I do a lot of work with young people, and as I work with people, there's starting to be more and more citizens that are waking up and that are understanding that the issues in this country are going to the fundamental foundation of this country, and I think that's a positive step. I think that now people are talking about it. I see people pushing to actually teach their children about the foundation of this country, and I think that's all a very positive sign that while things in the short term look bleak, I think we can turn this around in the long term, but it's going to take some work.
And you know, Karen, it just always brings to mind for me that there are people that think that this is a party line issue, you know, some of the things that are happening in our country. And at the end of the day, everyone's going to be affected. Everyone, no matter how you vote, what party you align yourself with, the stuff coming down the pike will get you too, if you don't do something about it.
Oh, I don't think this is a party issue even at all.
Mm-mm. No.
And I think that people need to just simply stop with the labels, because I think the labels are hurting us. It's not a rural issue or an urban issue. It's not Republican or Democrat or Tea Party or anything else you want to name. It's an issue with the American citizens understanding the Constitution. It's an issue with the federal and state government understanding the Constitution. That's the issue. It's not what you call it.
Yeah, that is the biggie, and it's funny for all of us who have gone beyond the eighth grade. I don't think any of us really ever anticipated that would be such important information in our lives, and I think that's probably how we got into this mess. Actually, we didn't see it slipping until it was really pretty far down the pipeline.
No, I think that's right. I mean, our fathers. You know, for my dad, the most important thing to him was for his kids to have a college education, because he didn't have that chance. He went to World War II, and then he went back to the ranch, and he didn't have that chance. And so in his generation, having the American dream was having a job and having a home. To him, that was the American dream.
And I remember one time he told me that he actually kind of felt sorry for my generation, and he really felt sorry for my kids' generation, because there's no general understanding of what the American dream is. I mean, it's taken for granted now that you're going to have a house. It's taken for granted that you're going to have a job. And, you know, now with the economy in such a horrible decline, and the valid concern that we are going to get our food and all of our natural resources from foreign governments, all of a sudden people are now, instead of just, you know, working for a job to feed their family, they've really got to look at these other broader issues and figure out what their constitutional rights are.
Yeah, when we have these, people think we're going to somehow feed our communities through some community garden or something like that. It's like, okay, welcome to the big world. That would last. Can you imagine if we were reduced to feeding our people through community gardens? That would just be absolutely hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Can't live on veggies.
Surprise. We've got a lot of water up at this end of the world. How much of the work you do revolves around water?
It's actually quite a bit. And growing up in Wyoming, water is very important because we don't have that kind of water. I mean, it doesn't rain there, which was another surprise for my friends in Washington, D.C., because they just assumed that it, you know, rained everywhere. And when I talked to them about prior appropriation doctrine and water rights and water ownership, they were totally surprised at how important water was, because they just took it for granted that it rains. That's, you know, another example of why this one size from Washington fits all just simply doesn't work.
Yeah, and out here where it rains a lot, relatively, it rains quite a bit. And when you talk about taking out the Klamath dams, the flooding issue is huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, that alone ought to be a deal breaker.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that the local citizens and the local governments have to be involved. We have to get these bureaucrats in Washington, or in your case, in Sacramento, to understand that what works in Northern California is not the same as Southern California, that what works in Yreka may not even work in Redding. And certainly where you guys have water and it rains, it will not work in Sublette County, Wyoming, because all we have is snowmelt, and then we have flood irrigation. And it would be impossible to grow a community garden in Sublette County. We only have 3 months, maybe, of frost-free days, and my ranch house is at 8,000 feet. I mean, it's just the reality of where we live.
And, you know, that brings to mind how critical it is for the state of California to be able to produce food the way that we always have, because we are the breadbasket of America, and we do supply healthy, monitored food to the entire country. And yet, they're shutting it down.
Yeah, for tiny fish that nobody cares about in the Delta and up here. I mean, it's one thing after the next. You know, somebody brought up spotted owls last night. So, you know, spotted owls, coho salmon, sucker fish. It kind of doesn't matter. I mean, we've already figured it out. I think once we fix those, there will be a new thing.
Yeah.
Attack. Oh, I agree with that. In my world, it's the sage grouse. We've got to look at the underlying act. We've got to look at the Endangered Species Act. We've got to look at the National Environmental Policy Act. We have to look at all of these acts that have been so skewed from their original intent by all these regulations. And there are, I mean, you know, one of the things that we've really been working on are ways to petition the federal government to at least deal with the regulations. The other thing we've got to do is put pressure on Congress to take back their authority.
Exactly. And it's 2012, we got to do it.
It's your crap.
Karen, thank you so much for being with us. We are up against a hard break here at the end of the hour. We will talk to you later. Have fun headed
back to Wyoming.
Exactly. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week on We the People Radio here, folks.
KCNR, Shasta, Redding.